Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Debbie Gagish of the Petowitz Group, and welcome to this week's edition of Blog Talk Radio, Revenue Marketer Radio. Today, we're actually live from Sweden. We're actually at the Bring Dialogue Conference, and we're actually having this radio show to serve as a case study for the workshop that we're holding, which is all about revenue marketers. We have two great panelists who will be joining us today. We have Liz McClellan from Sage, and we have Alex Pelletier from Acquisio. So I had to get people on the East Coast because I couldn't get people to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning for the radio show. So what I thought we would do is I want Liz and Alex to just give a little brief introduction of themselves, their role in the company, and what their company does. And then we're going to get into a series of questions that are general in nature, but basically will help us better understand what their role of revenue marketing and what that journey has been like for them. So, Liz, why don't we start with you?
Sure, and thanks. It's good to connect with you this morning here and this afternoon out there. I'm Liz McClellan, the Senior Director of Marketing for Sage Small Business Solutions. We market small business accounting solutions in the United States and in Canada.
Wonderful. And Alex?
Hi. Well, thanks again, Debbie, for having us on the show. Basically, I'm the director of marketing at Acquisio, and one of my roles is actually to make sure that all the leads generated from the marketing thing is actually followed up properly on the sales side. And Acquisio is a software as a service company, and we're actually selling a solution for agencies to better track their campaign management. So it's kind of a hard role to be selling or to be marketing to a bunch of great marketers that resides in agencies.
And I thought, Alex, I thought you had a new title. I thought it was Director of Revenue Marketing.
Yeah, actually, yeah, revenue marketing. It's the new word that we've been putting on my title so far. So I'm really, really focusing on generating revenue out of those marketing activities that we're doing.
That's awesome. And so just to let you guys know, Liz at Sage Software, they use a system called Pardot. It's a company that's based in Atlanta, Georgia, and they have it integrated with Axe. But they're moving to Eloqua probably within the next 12 months. And Alex is, you're a Marketo shop, right, Alex?
Yes, absolutely. We've been using Marketo for about 2 years now. And
okay.
prior to that, I was actually implementing Marketo at other company prior to that. So I've been in the industry and using that kind of software for a couple of years now.
So, okay. So I want to start with just a really basic question. And again, if you guys have questions, just, you know, jump in. But the first question I'd like to know is, and I'll start with Liz. Liz, what was going on at Sage Software that all of a sudden you woke up one day and said, hey, I need to have a marketing automation system? What was going on?
Well, we had some very disjointed marketing organizations, and marketing seemed to be doing one thing, and they had their own agenda, and sales had a completely different agenda. But at the end of the day, we really had the same goal. We just weren't aligned. And so we said, how do we get on the same page with reporting on the same metrics? How do we drive forward in a unified way towards the same goals? And quite frankly, how do we have visibility into one another's, goals and metrics, and how do we get on the same page to do this together? We're in different locations, and we were operating as separate teams, and so that's when we started to investigate how could we put in a marketing automation system and get better alignment between the groups.
So when did you guys do that?
We looked at this about 2 years ago. We started investigating different systems, and the big thing for us was everyone wanted to get together and figure out what our real conversion metrics were. We all had different theories, and you might laugh when we say that, but we were all measuring differently. And so for us to put a number around the goal and what we were doing, so that we could all establish a baseline and then move forward. That was really key to our group, especially in the executive level. They had no visibility into what we were really doing, you know, month to month.
And was that important, that executives got that visibility?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll tell you, Debbie, you know, when we first started looking at a marketing automation, you know, platform, there were a lot of questions from executives. What does this really mean? And we're still educating people along the way.
Okay. So, Alex, tell us a little bit about Acquizio and kind of how you guys started looking at marketing automation and what was the driving force behind implementing the technology?
Okay, yeah. Well, it was Acquizio was as the early days to actually generate leads from their marketing activities. So one of the main problems that we had at the time, and it was about 2 years ago, all the leads that were generated from any marketing activities were actually sent to the salespeople. So, for example, if we were sponsoring a webinar online and getting about 300 leads, or actually names, from that webinar, we were giving those 300 names to salespeople. And obviously, they were not able to follow up on all of them properly, and lots of leads or names were actually just dropped in the database. So that was one problem. And the other problem was mainly time to response to those prospects, because as you may know, when you do marketing activities, you're getting the names from the events a couple days after, and then it takes a couple days to clean the list and to put it in the system, and it takes a couple days of the salespeople to start getting on top of that list. And the problem that was generating from that, it was a big loss in momentum from the first initiated contact with those leads or prospects. And then by the time they got reached or contacted for the first time, there was sometimes a couple of weeks in between, so people were not even remembering who we were. So those were the two main problems that we tried to solve with marketing automation.
And Debbie, can I add one more thing to mine?
Sure, absolutely.
So one of our big challenges, and Alex, thanks for prompting this, you know, we were sending all leads over to sales and all leads were being treated equally. We had no real qualification process. We didn't have any behavioral data or any, you know, scoring or ranking or any methodology. We were sending over everything and expecting, you know, kind of average results.
Okay. And so that's a little bit around, you know, kind of what was driving this move for you guys to intake a marketing automation platform. And I know that one of the key success factors is alignment. Alignment with senior management around the goals of marketing, and also alignment with the sales organization around how this is going to make their life better. So, Liz, why don't we start with you, and why don't you tell us a little bit around how you were able to achieve alignment. Give us some tricks.
Well, mostly learning by, you know, doing the wrong thing at first. I think my own expectation was that we would be able to drive some amazing results in a pretty short time frame, and that was not correct. I really think that if we were to set the proper expectation for my group, our organization, it would be to say, this is a journey. You know, about 18 months is when, you know, you can realistically, from our standpoint, start to see some good results. It took us a while to select the right system. It took us a while to get it launched. And we didn't launch it correctly right away. We had limited understanding of the full capabilities. And even though we involved sales early on, it wasn't until we brought in outside help to really align sales and marketing. We should have, and I wish we had, kind of started with the end in mind and sat down in a room and said, what key performance metrics, what dashboard would we like to see, and then built our system to, you know, deliver those reporting metrics that we needed. But instead, we focused on getting the system live and then working out the reporting. So in hindsight, I would say setting the right expectations with your group is key. I think starting with the reporting goals in mind and going from that standpoint would be critical. Those were our big takeaways.
And I just want to add to something that Liz said, and that is if you're implementing marketing automation systems, she's exactly right. If you were to have that, what are the key metrics that you can now report on, even if it's written on a piece of paper, write down what those key messages are that you want to report on. And then when you implement, when you take a look at the people and the process elements that have to be involved in that, you move further down the path. Alex, what about you? And again, Alex's background is he consulted with multiple organizations on marketing before he decided to land one company. But Alex, what have you seen as far as what it takes to get achievement, I mean, to get goal alignment with both executives and organizations?
Well, I think the first thing is really important, and Liz mentioned it, is really to get everybody aligned on the same page. And the way we've been able to do this, I think, here at Acquizio was we started by creating and documenting the complete lead management process. So we started by getting everybody to agree what was exactly a lead, and we were very if I can use the expression, we're very picky on words that we were using to describe every stage or every status of leads that we had in the database. So, for instance, names that we're getting from a webinar, we call them prospects because they're not really engaged with us. And those prospects that are actually qualified, then we call them leads. And we have two stages of leads. We have, like, marketing leads, the one that needs to be qualified further, and we have sales leads, the one that are actually end up to salespeople. So by starting by defining all of these stages and agree with sales and marketing executives, so we were able to have this early stage alignment that really helped us to create the whole process.
Alex, tell me, how did you guys come up with these lead definitions? Did you go in a room and put a padlock on the door so salespeople couldn't escape? What was that process like? Because I would probably say 80% of companies don't have a agreed upon distinct definition of leads at different stages. So what was the process you used to actually get these lead definitions in place?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, I'm lucky enough to be working in an organization where the head of sales and marketing is the same guy. So it was a little bit easier maybe than other companies where you have two different people having those roles. But we indeed did that. We sat in the room, and I had a couple of salespeople some others that had more experience as well selling our solution, and tried to describe to me what they were looking for. For them, what was a good lead? What was somebody that was actually, you know, ready to engage with sales? So by that, we tried to define some of the names, and then we looked at the behaviors of those names and tried to figure out, you know, what led these prospects to become leads. And after that, we set up some rules and some scoring to do that. But the process was really to have a couple of meetings, and it was not done in just an hour meeting. I had a couple of meetings to make sure that we were kind of agreeing on what was those definitions.
And let me add to this, because the other thing that happens when you're intaking marketing automation is that you're having to educate the salespeople on what kind of online behavior you can actually see, right? So when you begin to explain to a salesperson, okay, we can see if they opened the email, we can see if they clicked on a link in an email, we can see what pages they went to, we can see how many pages they went to, we can see if multiple people came to the site. You can see all of that digital body language, right? And if you can see it, then what do you think that means? And at this point, because they've never really thought about digital body language, you're guessing. But it's typically a very, very good guess. So you have to educate the salespeople know when they get face-to-face with somebody, they know exactly how things are going to go. But you have to educate them around, now we can see this online behavior. What do you think that means? Do you think this is somebody who's showing a lot of interest? Okay? All right, Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, so it's a good point that you're bringing because at the beginning when we started to – we had those definitions, and then I started to measure the behavior and giving score on some of those behavior in order to you know, make the the best leads at the top of the list. And after a couple of weeks and a couple of meeting feedbacks with sales, they actually came back to me and said, you know what, when the person is opening an email, that actually doesn't really mean anything for us. At the beginning, they thought it would be important, but after reviewing it, we were giving too much points for people actually opening emails. So we adjust our scoring system in order to reflect more accurate behavior leading to actually qualified sales leads. So it's important to have this closed loop even after you add this initial discussion and definition agreed with salespeople.
Okay, so it would occur to me that as you were having these multiple discussions with the salespeople, that they were really buying in more and more to get the same power and the visibility and the insight that you're able to supply to them about qualified leads.
Yes, they were actually, it was a small team, so I don't know if it played a role in order to make it easier to have everybody on board. We had like five people in the sales team at this time when we implemented this, so it was a little bit easier, I would say, than if you're running it through a larger organization, but it really, really helped to get everybody on board.
Okay. And Liz, what did having lead definitions and lead scoring do for alignment between sales and marketing in your organization?
You know, two things. Alex hit a lot of really good points, and it sounds like we have had some similar challenges and of course opportunities. For us in the beginning, we had to debrief sales and make sure that they understood they were going to be getting fewer leads, but that they would be more qualified. And in terms of alignment, I think we've actually been able to build stronger credibility within our organization because, as Alex said, our scoring process was not correct out of the gate. It's still not 100%, and I consider it very much work in progress. We will learn how the process behave and adjust accordingly. But sales has felt really empowered in that they have a voice in this and that we're just not dictating, you know, procedure to them. It very much feels like a joint effort that we're all on the same page in alignment and working towards improving our metrics. And, you know, sales is, we have a medium-sized organization, I guess you would say, and sales is very quick to raise their hands and help us try to figure this out, and together we're meeting regularly and trying to get to, you know, a better state.
Okay. Well, let's talk a few minutes about metrics, and I want to talk about what you were measuring before and what you're measuring now and what kind of impact new metrics has made on your credibility as a marketing organization. And let's start with Alex.
Oh, okay. In terms of metrics, well, before we were just measuring, let's say, number of leads generated. And again, there was no definition, there was no distinction between any names and the ones that were really interested. And instead, now we are measuring what I would call multiple lead waterfall, just to take the well-known expression in the industry. So we, like the stage that we defined, we are now tracking what's the conversion rate from each of those stages. So if you want, I can just name you all the stages that we're tracking.
Absolutely.
So first we're tracking prospects. So these are actually any names that we're getting in our database. Then we have marketing qualified leads. And then we have sales leads. And then we have opportunities, and then we have clients. So now we're tracking the quantity of leads, if I can say, quantity of names that are at each stages, and we're monitoring what's the conversion rate of each of these stages. So and the reason why we're doing this is actually coming from the CFO of the company, as they are doing the model of the business and the budgeting stuff. We're given some target for a number of clients that we need to deliver each quarter. And now the challenge that we had before it was we were absolutely not able to tell how many leads we're going to get at the top of the funnel. So now with those conversion at each stages, I can go backward and say, okay, let's say as an example, if I need 10 new clients this quarter, that means that I need X amount of opportunity. That means I need Y amount of actually sales lead and Z amount of marketing leads and XYZ amount of prospects. So now I can go backward and have some projection and trying to align all my marketing activities to generate the numbers I require at the top of the funnel, and following the same conversion ratio, I will be able to meet the target from the CFO. So that's really where we're pushing the tracking and the metrics and trying to have really focused on those conversion rates and those numbers that we're getting at each stages.
So, Alex, how long did it take you to put that waterfall in place? And are you guys familiar with a consulting company called Serious Decisions?
S-I-R-I-U-S.
They are a consultancy based out of the U.S., ex-Gardner guys, and they do really great research around marketing. And they've came up with something called a Serious Decisions Waterfall, because what they noticed about 2-3 years ago were that marketers were now having to manage a funnel similar to the kind of funnel that sales manage. So they came up with a standard set of definitions, and they call it the lead waterfall. And so that's what Alex just took you guys through. So it's a great place to go to get some standards and best practices around a lead waterfall. So anyway, so how long did it take to put that in place, Alex? Well, specifically so that you were comfortable that your conversions were.
Okay, sorry, I think I missed the last few words because the line was not good, but I think the question was more how long it took me to put that in place. It took me a couple of months. Actually, we're just starting, more than about a year, I would say, because the first year was really more to put in place those different stages and to put in place, you know, all the mechanic around it, all the nurturing programs, all the scoring to test that and to tweak it. And now the second year, we've been focusing more, okay, what is it generating? And you're right. I mean, I did not hire yet Serious Decision to help us building that waterfall, but I got really inspired by the publication that they made available. So we're now trying to measure very more precisely each of those stages, and we're still in the process of getting this, because generating metrics is sometimes can be a little bit challenging. It's like more than a year after the first year that we've been able to start to measure those things.
Okay. So, Alex, are you guys forecasting metrics now?
Yes and no. We have a model in place that we're able to know how many leads that we're gonna need in the future to meet those requirements from the CFO. But we're not fully aligning all of our marketing activities to meet those requirements. We're in the process. So my goal for this fall is actually at the end of the fall, I just want to make sure that we're now able to have those projected numbers at each stages and align with those activities to generate those numbers. So that's going to be my challenge for this fall.
Okay, excellent. So, Liz, let's talk about your metrics and kind of what you were reporting prior to and what you're reporting after marketing automation.
Sure. So, Alex, I give you a round of applause. You're much further ahead than our group is right now. But, you know, in the beginning stages, we were measuring top-level number of leads and then leads to conversion. And, you know, we were measuring things like average revenue per customer. But we really just used top-of-the-funnel metrics to an end conversion rate, and we didn't have detailed information along steps in the journey. So today, and it's still evolving, we know the number of prospects that we have, or that would have been our former number of leads. We have a marketing-qualified lead number, sales-qualified lead number, and then conversion rates along the way. We're also able to, through our own software, do some pipeline management. so that now, based on the scoring that we have, the reps can keep things in queue and do better follow-up. But we're still working this out. We have a long way to go, and it's evolving every day.
Okay. And so let's talk a little bit around skills, because I have to tell you, it's last week now, I presented at the CMO University, and I gave basically the same kind of presentation on the revenue marketing journey, but I had an angle more toward the CEO, and what everybody wanted to chat about were the skills that were required to put in place a revenue marketing practice. And, you know, if you think about the four stages of revenue marketing, traditional, lead generation, demand generation, and revenue marketing, let's have a conversation about skills that are required and how you found them or how you grew them. And let's start with you, Liz.
Sure. You know, hindsight, we didn't have that skill set in-house. It wasn't until a year into the journey that we actually hired someone with that expertise. You know, we had a mix of marketers who, to use your term, Debbie, we had a revenue marketer in place, but we also had some emotional marketers in place, you know, folks who did things on gut instinct and made some decisions before all the metrics were in. And as much as I hate to admit that, that was just kind of the nature of the business at the time. And so, had I had a chance to do this over, we probably would have invested in some revenue marketer training or hired specific skill sets before we began this journey. You know, we're in a good state now, and most folks are on board and excited about learning this new skill set, but it is a ramp up.
So specifically, what are the skills, Liz, that you found to be important in your practice?
The skills that we found important in terms of the revenue marketers? Detailed analysis. We had folks who could do top-level analysis, but really getting in, meeting with the sales organizations, understanding every single nuance along the way from the time a prospect engages with us. So someone who's familiar with behavioral marketing, someone who has very deep analytical skills, someone who can step back and take a look at things from an executive standpoint and make sure that they present metrics that are meaningful to a sales organization, but also to C-level executives. I think someone who can really cull through the data and present to both groups is really a key part of your organization.
Okay. And then, Alex, let's talk about the skills that you found to be important as you made this journey to revenue marketing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we started very small. Actually, I started implementing Marketo myself and then started to build the scoring model along with sales feedback. For the first year and a half, I would say that, you know, I was quite able to manage this. Obviously, I had some copywriter that were helping to producing those emails needed into those nurturing programs. But one thing I want to emphasize here is the need for content is really important, because the majority of all of this lead management process is based on delivering the right content to the right lead at the right time. So it's really important to generate and build this content. And at the beginning, and we still need to improve and create more content. But at the beginning, we had to hire external people to produce content that will be meaningful at those different stages of the buy cycle of the need. So that was one need. The other part that Liz mentioned, which is really important, and we're still behind on this, it's the analytic type of person. You're going to really need somebody that is actually analyzing all the results of all of your campaigns and how are they generating the numbers or the results that you're expecting. So that we're still looking to hire. Well, actually, I just got the budget to hire this person now. So we're going to be able to increase our team. But I think it's really important to have that in place. Somebody that's going to generate content, somebody that's going to be able to analyze all the results, and also somebody that's going to be able to play around and to tweak those campaigns that you're doing, just as going to be able to integrate the content within the marketing automation software. So that's pretty much how we're looking to set up the team. But I needed some time to prove that, you know, that was the way to go. And now the CEO and everybody is on board here at Aquizio. So now I just got budget to hire people and to make this team look like more like a revenue marketing team.
Excellent. And so one of the things that we're going to be doing after the radio show and after break, when you come back, I'm going to introduce you to the skills and competencies required to have an effective revenue marketing team, and it'll, of course, echo everything that basically Alex and Liz has said. I want to back up, and I want to ask you guys a question, and Alex, I think you talked a little bit about it, but one of the things that we were talking about earlier is, you know, for a long time, companies really focused on their sales cycle, and it was all about how you sell to a client. And when salespeople were the person that the client had to call because there was no other option, that was probably okay. But now that we know that our prospects are online and they're 70% through their decision-making process before we even know that they're there, let's talk for a few minutes about the customer's buy cycle. So, Alex, why don't we start with you? Do you have a map buy cycle, or what do you guys do with the notion of how the customer buys versus how you sell?
Yeah, well, for us, we're a really marketing-driven organization. So we've been historically generating pretty much all the opportunities from marketing. And so that's something that was maybe a little bit biased from other more traditional organizations. But for us, one thing that we did to make this work was really to, first, like I mentioned, to create in the process, we really mapped out all the stages of those leads going through their buy cycle. And because the whole process or the whole map is starting from the initial contact from any marketing initiative up to the client, we don't call it anymore like a sales cycle or something, because, you know, half of this process is now managed by the marketing team. And one thing that we did to make sure that the end of was done properly from marketing to salespeople is we put in place a telemarketing or telesales. We call them sales development representative. But we put in place someone, a team that is actually qualifying all the marketing-ready leads. So anybody that the score is high enough goes to the sales development team representative, and they do human qualification. So they go and make sure that this is actually a right prospect or a right person to end up the sales team. And I think that was key because at the beginning of the process, we were just sending qualified marketing leads, you know, based on the score to the salespeople. But, you know, the more salespeople you have, more different judgment you may end up having on those leads. So that's why we try to centralize and have a specific function in the whole cycle that is just to qualify those leads. So the feedback was better as well to help us optimize the our scoring system. But anyway, long story short, I think that we were able to achieve this whole revenue cycle from marketing to sales, but within one cycle because we had this piece in the middle that we're able to make the bridge between marketing and sales.
So one of the things that we are seeing across organizations is even though you have these powerful marketing information systems which allow you to score a lead, you know, is it qualified? Does it meet the right kind of demographic? Is online papers telling us that's really interested? We're seeing a lot of organizations kind of put in a soft touch function right in the middle, so that marketing touch team for really what we call BANT qualification, and that stands for budget, authority, needs, and time. And then that way, when you pass that lead over to sales, it's just that much more qualified. These are inexpensive resources to hire compared to a salesperson taking their time to have to do that additional BANT qualification. So it's typically very cost-effective for a company to have that team right there in the middle. Liz, I'd like to ask you a different question. And by the way, you guys have questions, this is the time to ask. What's your name again?
Eric.
Okay. That's one of the names I can pronounce here. Okay. Eric had a question. And it's about you. How did it take you to implement a marketing automation system?
Sorry, was that for me? Because it broke. I'm sorry.
This is for Liz. How long did it take you to source? How long did it take you to source and implement a marketing automation system?
Sure, no problem. We started looking in November 2 years ago. It took us about 2.5 months to evaluate. I will tell you our different systems. I will tell you our process is a little bit easier because we were limited in budget. Had we had a bigger budget at that time, we probably would have taken 3 or 4 months to evaluate. So we purchased the system in January. We were implemented by April, May. So overall, it took us about 6 months.
Okay. What made the decision for you to actually implement? Just get the technology in, set up, and running.
Can you repeat that, Debbie?
Yeah. Once you guys made the choice for Pardot, how long did it take you just to actually get Pardot up and running?
I would say that it took us about 10 weeks, only because we had some, you know, internal hurdles to kind of overcome, and we had to pull a lot of teams together. But Pardot was pretty easy to implement.
Now, most of this technology is SaaS technology. And, I mean, literally, you have enough instance within a day. But you also have to make sure that if you have an integration with a CRM, that those things are set up correctly as well. So a lot of companies will have some out-of-the-box integration with CRM. So, for example, if you take a look at the Altbox, the Marketo stuff, they pretty much out-of-the-box, pretty much one-click, you're going to get a basic integration between that marketing automation system and a CRM. If you have a CRM that is not Salesforce.com, at least in the States, and this is what they had, a different CRM, and they had an SAP, and they had all kinds of stuff. They actually had to do some work around to get those systems set up so they actually integrate together. But these systems are not, you know, it's really the integration point that take the most time to get the systems up and running. Hey, Liz, how large is your marketable database?
How large is it?
Yeah.
I think we have about 100, you know, between 125 and 200,000, you know, prospect type leads for information.
Now, that's on the Peachtree side. How about on the Simply side?
On the Simply side, it's probably around 200,000 to 300,000.
Okay. All right. So that answers the question. So. Okay. And, Alex, I have implemented Marketo a number of times and also done it for your own company. What have you seen from an implementation standpoint?
Well, for us, because I knew the software before, it was probably a little bit faster. But I think that the main point here, it's the integration, the system integration is really not the challenge here. What really takes some time is to have, you know, your processes and your discussion with sales and marketing to put this thing in place. That's where you're going to have more time required, because the technology is so easy to implement. It's not the challenge. The other part of the process that we found that takes a lot of time is the content creation, because at the beginning we did not have enough, valuable content. So we needed to wait before launching our nurturing campaigns. We needed to wait a couple of weeks in order to get this content created. So I think those are two variables that you really need to account when you're implementing this, but they're not necessarily related to the actual technical implementation of the software.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And the thing I'll say, if you were to go back and listen to every video show that I've ever done, we've been doing it for over 2 years. One of the consistent themes is if I just paid more attention to process in the beginning. If I just knew what it would take to get that sales and marketing alignment, if I had just taken the time to do those lead definitions and do those process-oriented kinds of things, I think it's very important. So, now, does anyone have any questions for Alex and for Liz? No questions? Okay. Go ahead.
The cost of the whole process.
Okay, I can share costs with you in general. So most of the marketing automation systems, the cost is predicated upon the number of emails in your database, right? And then it's also based on the amount of feature and functionality that you've got. So some systems will go for as low as $1,000 a month. Some systems, you know, I think the biggest deal from a license that I've ever done is $100,000 a year. Right. So it depends upon which system, and people ask me all the time which system is best. There is no one best system. It's really what a client needs. That's what it boils down to. So so you'll find a great deal of range in pricing depending upon the size of the database, depending upon the complexity, and depending upon which system you buy. Okay. So but $2,000 to, you know, $50,000 a month.
Yeah, but I was thinking as well, because post implementation, I know the system has the most,
I tell you, for most of these systems, the cost of implementing is negligible compared to the value that you get. These are not like legacy systems. These are mostly cloud-based applications where the implementation is very straightforward. That's why you don't see the Accentures and those and Capgemini. You don't see any of the big consulting firms doing this because there's not enough money in the implementation. There's just not enough, right? Most of the consulting services in this space come around how do you optimize these guys. That's most of the money. So you'll find, and I can, and if you want to later, I can give you some specific general costs for things. Okay. And I want to close out with questions for each. You. So we have a group of people in here, and I think a lot of them are probably at the lead generation stage. So what are the top two or three lessons learned that you would like to share with this audience as your parting comments? And let's start with Liz.
Sure. So I said it before in the beginning, but we can't stress enough the planning with the end in mind. Get all of your metrics out. Get agreement from your top executives that this is what they want to see delivered. Build out your assets, all of your content, make sure that you've got a resource in place who can handle that, and set your own expectations. Be prepared that you're probably going to need more than what you think you have, and you need an expert to help you with that, whether you have it internally or you outsource it. But have a content plan, have a content strategy. And then I think just know that it's not an overnight flip that you can switch and be on. It's an iterative process. You are going to be learning at every step along the way. And just when you think you've got it, you've got the scoring methodology down, something can be tweaked and changed and modified so that you get better results. It's definitely a learning journey.
Okay, Alex, what's your advice?
Yeah, I think that just as Liz pointed out, it's very important. This is a journey. This is not an overnight quick fix. Make sure that you have like the right resources on your team. One other thing I would like to add is that you should be starting small with simple nurturing program and then move on to more complex thing as you master the whole thing, because we started with just one simple nurturing program, and now we're running multiple nurturing programs. We started with a basic lead scoring system with one threshold. Now we're running a complex lead scoring system with multiple thresholds. So it's really important to iterate down the road. And you should also consider a lot of the sales feedback in this iteration process, because they're the best people to provide you feedback on you know, what is it that you're doing that makes more sense. So I think those are the main points that I'd like to share, actually. And
well,
maybe one more, sorry.
Okay.
If you know, your current processes and responsibilities within your marketing team will change. So that's something you need to consider, because implementing this is not just having a software, it's having a new a new way of doing marketing. So people roles will evolve towards those of revenue marketing.
I love that last comment. And again, that's the whole notion behind the journey to revenue marketing is all the change that's associated with it. Well, listen, Alex, thank you so much for your sharing this day and for your insight, everybody. So Liz, I have to ask you a question. So how hot is it going to be in Atlanta today?
Well, it had cooled down to 94 degrees, so it was great.
Oh, the whole 94 degrees. So, well, listen, again, thank you guys so much for being on the show, and I'll talk to you both soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.